Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine, where we cover Georgia politics like Kudzu covers the South. On this week's show, we're going to talk about the 10th Congressional District race, which started formulating with qualifying happening through Thursday of this week, about the big Democratic debate in South Carolina and our neighboring state, and a little more on the Georgia legislative situation with a special session having to be held, and many more things. We're going to have Bernita Smith join us for the first time with a regular feature called From the Blogosphere, and also 10th Congressional District Chair and former Democratic nominee in 2006, Terry Holley, is going to join us for a special interview. We're looking forward to that, but let's see if Tim Shiflett is with us on the line. Hi, Tim. How you doing?
Pretty good tonight, Dave. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, doing well. Well, been some things going on this week. On a national scene, the South Carolina debate happened. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I thought it was pretty tame, actually. It seemed like everyone held serve except for a couple of people. Really, I believe if I had to pick an overall winner, it's probably Joe Biden. He might have separated himself just a bit from the second tier of candidates.
I would concur with that.
But on the other hand, though, Dave, I don't think there were any serious gaffes. I don't think anyone really hurt themselves a lot. And the most memorable line of the evening had to be one word uttered by Senator Biden to a question. Yes, so that's how tame the debate really was. I look for a lot more fireworks on the third with the Republican candidates.
Oh, certainly. Well, just talking about that, one thing I kind of noticed was you had eight candidates and really too many candidates for, you know, there to be too much interaction. But really it was almost like you had sets of debates within it, not so much that these people went after each other, but they were debating for expectations with these people. You had the top tier with Senator Clinton and Senator Obama trying to become the front runner. And not that they really interchanged with each other. Then you had that who's going to be the next candidate in, that number three person, John Edwards and Bill Richardson. Then you had Senator Biden and Senator Dodd for that next level. And then the final one, I guess, the fringe left candidate, former Senator Gravel and Representative Kucinich.
Well, that's right. But I think what wound up happening as a result of this 90-minute debate with all these candidates was that essentially Senators Obama and Clinton held serve and remained as the top two candidates in the race. I don't think that John Edwards did anything or distinguished himself in any way that would help him move up on either one of them. So if there was a loser in the debate, if you want to call it that, it might have been Edwards.
Yes, I think so too. I mean, he did pause on the question about who is your moral leader. I mean, it seems like very easy for anybody of faith to say their God, when he gave his answer, it was a fine answer. It was just a little bit of pause there, and he wasn't a real attacking style. And he also didn't give a lot of details to what I've been told are the most detailed plans of anybody in the race.
Well, that's true. And in the next group of candidates, I think an interesting thing has happened in the third tier. That's where Kucinich has, to this point, represented the liberal left of the party. All of a sudden, he's got himself a little competition in former Senator Gravel from Alaska.
Yes, one of the more interesting exchanges, the two of them seemed to, team up at one point on Senator Obama, which to me was really a net positive for Senator Obama. It made him look like a very mainstream candidate, which this is showing how much political thought is evolving in our country, where a black candidate can be one of the mainstream candidates and the more fringe-left candidates attacking him, and that's a very healthy thing.
Another thing that overshadowed this debate a little bit that we'll probably get into tonight is what Rudy Giuliani said earlier this week about Democrats and their weakness on defense. Once again, they're bringing the terrorist card, playing that against the Democrats. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Democrats answer that this time around. In 2004, I don't think we answered that question very well.
I think we're in better shape, and also I think people are kind of tired of the offense-defense line that the Republicans seem to like to use, because it's fine being on the offensive against Osama bin Laden, but when you're picking new folks up to be on offense, that's a different case to make.
But from Giuliani's viewpoint, that was probably the thing for him to do. What is he beside Mr. 9/11, after all? What else does he bring to the dance?
The things he does bring to the dance from New York City and some of his personal baggage are not things that are going to help him in the Republican primary.
Right.
Well, in getting back to the Democratic debate, all the candidates and a lot of complaints about the format. One thing that did strike me is that somebody said that Senator Clinton, her whole style was shown in the campaign in being that she's just going to get 3 yards in a cloud of dust. You know, not try to make any, you know, huge things, just incremental, just get this done and be a very safe, you know, run a very safe race, which I guess at times when we saw Senator Kerry taking some risk, a safe race might not be a bad thing at times.
Let me ask you this, David. Do you think in future debates, those who are putting these debates on should look at perhaps dividing the groupings up? I mean, it seemed like the 90 minutes just flew by. It seemed like everyone didn't get asked but a couple of questions. Senator Gravel, as a matter of fact, compared himself to a potted plant on the stage because he felt he had been forgotten. Do you think there were just too many people up there for this type of format?
There were probably too many people, but I don't see how they're just going to shove somebody off the stage. Because if you said, oh, Senator Gravel, all you are is a former senator, you could say the same thing about Senator Edwards, which he's, you know, by almost anyone's measure, the number three candidate right now. And
yeah.
So you can't get rid of people. So I thought, I heard someone on CNN after the fact, James Carville, I believe, saying why not just focus on a more narrow set of issues. And just then I saw on Senator Biden's website, he's got how he wants to have an Iraq-only debate and only talk about Iraq. I'm sure you could kind of broaden that maybe a bit and do just a foreign policy debate. And that might be a way to narrow things in where you're not having questions just all over the place about Walmart and people's personal leader and just so many different things.
Yeah, but what you might run into, especially with the upcoming GOP debate, you might have 13 or 14 people up there on the stage.
And
then what do you do?
And certainly, I think we're going to talk about that, but they're looking at 10 candidates this Thursday, and there's a good chance that the candidate that could be the nominee may not even be on that stage.
That's true, especially with the way Fred Thompson's been polling lately.
Absolutely. Well, moving on to another topic, the 10th congressional race, the qualifying happened for the 10th congressional race, and 10 candidates made the race for the 10th district. There were three Democrats, James Marlowe, Evita Pascal, and Denise Freeman. Denise Freeman's run before in a similar district, you know, under some old maps. James Marlowe has quite a team put together with Jeff DeSantis, Emil Runz, Charlie Bailey, and others. And then I don't know a lot about Evita Pascal, but I believe she comes from the biggest part of the district, Augusta, and may have had some some elected official experience in the judicial circle. There were six Republicans, and James Whitehead, Bill Green, and Paul Braun probably be the most notable of those. And there's a Libertarian candidate, Jim Sensenbrenner, and there's also three more Republicans, Eric Underwood, who apparently has run under everybody's banner, Democratic, Independent, and Republican now, Mark Myers, who is a real estate agent, and Nate Pulliam, which doesn't even have like a true campaign site at this time to even learn about him. What are your thoughts on the 10th?
Well, everybody's got their mind on one thing. Obviously, Mr. Whitehead has been anointed by the GOP establishment as the favorite. Obviously, this is a heavily Republican district with Congressman Norwood consistently running between 60% and 70%. The question is, will there be a runoff, and can Mr. Whitehead be held below 50%? I think it's possible. Then in a runoff, anything could happen.
I think it's very possible because from what I understand, this William Green, Bill Green, he was a full-time candidate. He's a professional political consultant, so he, even though he may not do everything like every other political consultant would, he's not going to just run a completely goofy campaign. So, and he also is running to the far hard right on things such as immigration, and so he may then pull off some of the hard right base from Whitehead. And then also you have Paul Braun, who's run for Congress before, I believe finished second to Matt Collins back in the old 3rd District, which included my home area of Jonesboro at the time. So he has some experience there and has some name idea. And plus, he comes from Clark County, one of the larger counties. So you may have the Republican vote split some, and now the Democratic vote narrowed in because Terry Holley decided not to run, and that's going to help the vote be more coalesced. Well, Tim, we're going to welcome Bernita Smith in to talk about our blog update of the week. Bernita, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, Bernita, well, I was just looking through the blogs, getting ready for the show. Noticed at times this week it was a little quieter. Tell us what was going on in the Georgia blogosphere.
I think the two issues were on the Georgia Democratic blog, were the 10th Congressional District and the budget impasse.
Yes, and that's Tim and I, you may have been listening. We had a little talk about the 10th Congressional race, 10 candidates. The Democratic field narrowed unexpectedly at last minute, and Terry's going to be with us on later. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, from the blogs, I think it ranged from Terry Holley dropping out to the discussion on whether the DPG could actually endorse a Democrat in that race. And, you know, the discussion ranged from it would be setting a new precedent and the fact that, you know, the Democratic Party of Georgia can't really get involved that much in a federal race because of, you know, McCain-Feingold rules.
Yeah.
So they're pretty limited on what they can do investing in it.
And I'll tell you, it never came up at yesterday's state committee meeting. It was never even presented or proposed to endorse anyone. So I think some of the people that are looking at that decided that it would be maybe a negative precedent-setting move for the future.
I think that was a good move that it wasn't brought up. It just would have, I mean, you got to really always play chess in politics and think 5 steps ahead on every move you make. So if we made the move this time, what would happen in the next race, which the next race will be, you know, the U.S. Senate race. And we know there's going to be more than one Democrat that enters. We could only be lucky if there was only one, but I'm sure there'll be more than one. So it really would have set, it would have set them up, I think, for failure later.
Yeah,
they would have made the move now.
Because people would have pointed back to that. Now, someone on the blogs I did see talked about doing a straw poll instead of a true endorsement.
I think, I agree with the straw poll. I think that would be good because other states do it, and it gives the state committee members actually a reason to feel like they're a part of the process. Or that, you know, most presidential candidates court the state committee members, but they don't do it in Georgia because they know we don't really do anything. And I'm a state committee member, so I can talk from experience. We don't really, you know, have a major stake in a governance role, which we're supposed to. So I think that would get candidates to actually come into state committee members and talk to us and find out, you know, because when you see our name listed, most people will ask the state committee member who you're going to vote for. Well, if they've never addressed the state committee as a whole, then, you know, you have to basically do your own research.
Yes. Well, one kind of caveat or a different idea off of the straw poll, instead of doing it maybe at a state committee meeting, do it at some of our, you know, Democratic JJ dinners, maybe not the statewide one, but some of our counties could do different straw polls at different times to be a way to get more interest in people coming to these events, and then maybe it could just be $1 to vote. To raise a little more funds.
Well, I'm not even sure if a county party did it, because I think if a candidate wanted to use that in, you know, their publicity, I think if everyone knew it was paid for it, you know, then people are going to know, well, your guys paid the most money. I think if you just did a straw poll just to do a straw poll and only those who are active county members can do it, I think you might increase your base of membership because they know that at some point, they're going to be actually taking a poll and defining who they're going to endorse, I think is always a good thing.
Yes, yes. I mean, Minnesota, that's been something the DFL there has done for a long time, is having the DFL, you know, straw poll type thing that the person can still have to run a primary and win, but they have that poll backing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's always good for a candidate, and it builds excitement. I mean, you have to do things that's going to build investment and not just meet with people. You've got to build people that want to invest in the party, in the county party system. So that was the talk. And then the next issue was really the budget impasse and how the Republicans basically look like idiots since they control all three chambers.
Yes, and I think everybody's like, everybody that knows about this situation blames the Republicans. There's no way you can blame the Democratic Party, the Democratic leadership. It's all on the Republicans, but is there a loud enough megaphone attached to let people see that it is the Republicans doing it?
I don't think there is. I don't think we have a megaphone unless we don't have the batteries in it, because you really don't hear it unless you look on the blogs. I mean, even Bill Shipp wrote an article about it, and if Bill Shipp is going to be the voice of the Democratic Party, then, you know, that's something wrong we're relying on.
Yes, up in Tim and I's area, there's the Romney's Tribune, not known as a real Democratic vehicle, had their editorial about the legislative session called "They Did Nothing," and nothing in all caps with an exclamation point at the end.
That's what I don't think we need to let the journalists spread it. I think it needs to be spread throughout, I mean, from within the party and outward. And there wasn't any communication about the fact where people could use talking points.
Yeah, and I think part of that is
their editors. So I think that would have been really, really helpful from the Senate caucus, from the House caucus. If they weren't going to say anything publicly, they should have said something internally to give us all talking points.
Yes, and I guess that they maybe, you know, they were doing things to get these points to the media, but then, you know, more talking points as we go along so the activists can, because I think we all know how powerful the street committee can be at times.
I'm not even sure if they were getting talking points out to the media, because I didn't think I saw anything where it quoted any of our Democratic leaders.
Yes.
Saying this was, mockery, that they spent all this time in session and, they still didn't do anything with peach care, but they took 2 weeks off and we still don't have a peach care resolution. And I think they're, on one blog, Griff, he did a really good blow-by-blow account on a radio show. I mean, those are the places where, Democrats need to start sending people out. You know, if we need a speaker's list or something, they just need to start getting our message out. And so someone can say, from the Democratic Party or from a county, Democratic County Party, this is what was said. But if we don't talk about it, we know the attention span of the average voter is not going to last long. So what are we going to do, bring it up in the 2008 elections? Well, I can guarantee you they'll fix all their problems by the 2008 session.
Yes, we need to start building the negatives now so they never get it back up to a high 65% approval or whatever it may be. But that's the reason we're having shows like this and we're talking so we can spread it at least in one form, then it'll grow. Another big event that happened that Tim and I were discussing was the debate, and if I'm not mistaken, you were part of the hosting of a big event down in Atlanta, a debate watching party. What did people feel about that event?
I hosted it with Atlanta Stonewall Democrats, and it was well attended. And I think from that event, well, one thing on the blogosphere no one really did a great write-up on it. So I don't know if it's because people were just like, wow, it's really early, way too early, or they just didn't really have an opinion, because I think the debate, you couldn't really get a grasp of each candidate. Like, they didn't discuss education, which is, major in this country. We've got some major. They didn't really discuss health care. They just discussed, did you have a plan? But, all their health care initiatives or energy initiatives, you didn't really hear one candidate had enough time to really give a good analysis of what they wanted to get done. I think everyone was really interested about the answers about if two American cities were attacked and the differences of opinion, how Hillary and Edwards came out strong on it and Obama seemed to waffle, and the fact that they didn't ask everyone that question. It wasn't a well-balanced debate.
Yeah. I think the consensus in the regular media and the blogosphere, too many candidates, too many issues, and Tim and I were discussing this, I don't know that we could cut the number of candidates at this point, but we certainly maybe could define the issues down to maybe just foreign policy for a debate, say healthcare and education for a debate. And
I think that would have worked out a whole lot better.
Yes. But
Ms. Smith, could I jump in with a question?
Absolutely.
And looking around the blogosphere around Georgia, who do you find at this point, or do you find someone that is the favorite candidate of the bloggers for the presidential nomination?
No, I don't think there's a favorite out there. I don't think there's a favorite at all.
Yes, and Georgia, I did see that there's a lot of support for Edwards on some people's parts, but that may not be because they're with the blogosphere. That may be for other reasons. And Obama obviously created all that excitement with his event. And so I think those two seem maybe, if anybody has an edge, do you think they have a little edge?
Does anyone have a more of an edge?
Maybe, well, Edwards and Obama to a point.
I think to a point, just because people who have previously worked on their campaigns since 2004 on Edwards' part are still blogging about him. And Obama has about, I think, 5 different meetup groups in just the metro area alone. But they don't really have a blog. It's just more of an information base. When Obama's coming around or things like that. And really, there's only been Edwards and Obama that's been in Atlanta. I mean, Biden's coming, and Chris Dodd is planning an event, and Hillary's coming. So I don't think there has been that much of talk about him, because there's only really been 2 candidates, and Edwards has come, you know, every month since. I think he'll be here for 3 months in a row.
Yes, I mean, coming to the JJ dinner.
Yeah, he'll be at the JJ, and he was just here for a fundraiser, and then he was here the month before that for another fundraiser with the trial lawyers.
Yes, because that's one of his main backers, and they're obviously one of the, you know, money machines of the Georgia Democrats.
Yep.
So, and I'll say this, I saw that event from Joe Biden's campaign, not really familiar with the host, and did not see it posted anywhere else other than the email I got.
I was posted on the Red Clay Democrats website.
Yes. I mean, did you hear much about it other than just the one email you may have gotten or a post one place? Or
no, I just saw it posted on the Red Clay Democrats.
It's pretty quiet.
That was the only place. And I think that he might not have a good coordinator in Georgia.
No, and I don't
know. Or whoever's hosting it. I didn't even know who's hosting it.
Yes, I didn't recognize the gentleman's name. Sean Greenberg, Seth Greenberg. And so that was the host, and there was somebody.
Oh, I think Seth gives a lot of money to Democrats.
And that may be. I know, like, Governor Richardson, he had an event recently,
yes.
And he had, you know, Buddy Darden and Sam Zamorripa were, you know, behind him. And I think that helps, too, if you have some elected officials that people know that have a base themselves to pull from.
Oh, I think Seth is a lawyer, so he's pulling from the trial attorney.
Yes.
So I think that was an inside network thing. And it's
also
at 11:45 in the morning.
Oh, yes. Not for people that have to work a regular job, that's not a good time.
Well, yeah, so it might be just for a small group of people who can come during the lunch hour.
Yes. Well, tell me, Bernita, what should we expect to see on the blogs this week?
Well, I know on Tondi's Tavern, they also have a great Blog Talk Radio interview with James Marlowe, so that's up and posted.
Yes.
And I think this coming week, not really sure. You know, things change.
Oh, yes, and the blogging,
and
it's not like
it's a quiet. It's quiet time right now.
It's not a magazine where it's coming in the next, you know, next week's issue. It's not that type of thing. It moves, you know, much more rapidly. But I never know when you kind of catch wind of something that might be coming. And obviously when the special session, the dates get set, something more will be said about that. The last I heard is the Speaker of the House is set in stone how he feels, and the governor and the lieutenant governor are standing their ground as well. So I don't know what will come of that, but I know that one of the Democratic representatives told me this weekend that if they don't get something settled soon, they're going to start having to furlough state employees. And I remember back in the early 90s when they had to go that route, that made, you know, then Governor Zell Miller as unpopular during his gubernatorial term as anything did.
Well, hopefully that might work for us on that end. Not that I want anyone to not have a job, but
that's something that we wouldn't want to see. I know I work for the state of Georgia through Floyd County Schools, and my mother works for the state of Georgia. And
yeah, I think they're probably, if they can't figure it out then, I mean, I don't think they would let it get to that point just because they know what the political fallout would be. It wouldn't be they did it because of people like yourself who work for the government they were doing on behalf. they would only do it based on a political fallout. I don't really think the common person's opinion matters really to this Republican.
No, it's
governor, lieutenant governor. I think it's all rhetoric.
It's very much a power play, and it'll be I'm kind of interested to hear about what'll happen at their statewide convention if people begin to walk out when the governor speaks or whatever may happen.
I think that would be really interesting. So I think we should use this time as Democrats to stress that they're spending $250,000 on a special session.
Oh yes, I mean they're giving us they're giving plenty of ropes to themselves. We just have to show people what they're doing. And I think if something really divisive happens at their convention, which it may turn by then, but it looks like it will. If it happens, then I definitely think that'll get press coverage, and that
yeah.
will work in our favor. Because while sometimes the budget numbers and the process may, a lot of voters may kind of turn that off, just a flat-out old-fashioned feud may really ignite interest.
I think that would be really good. And I think on the Democrat side, I think we just all have to work hard to at least get Marlo into the runoff.
Yes. Well, tell us your thoughts on that real quick. We narrowed down to three candidates, and Terry will be joining us soon. I have the switchboard here waiting for him to call in. But there's three Democratic candidates, six Republicans, and one Libertarian. What are your thoughts on it?
I think that Marlo does have a chance. I mean, what's it, 37% chance? That's the Democratic turnout for that area. But I think he may lose a lot of ground in Augusta because Pascal is from Augusta, and she's a well-known trial attorney there.
Yes, I mean, in the Democratic community, she doesn't appear to be very well-known, but then over in Augusta.
In the statewide, she doesn't have more of a name, but I believe in Augusta she has because she's been there for 20 years practicing.
Yes, and then Denise Freeman, some people may remember when she ran in previous terms to get some vote. And a lot of it will be how much Jim Whitehead can coalesce the Republican vote.
Well, he's already got billboards up.
Yes, if billboards in mainly Augusta or all over the district.
I've seen some in Augusta. He has definitely billboards up in Augusta, so he's doing the name ID.
Yes, which will be, it'll be a big part of this race, that and turning your vote out if you can, solidly identify supporters. But, I've heard Bill Green is really running hard to the right with immigration, and the other fellow, Paul Braun, he's making some mistakes, which are pointed out, but then he's got enough money to let himself be out there. And if they could both even sneak into double digits, that would assure this thing of being a runoff.
Well, on their side, I mean, I don't know what the Marlo campaign is doing for outreach. I mean, I would have assumed that he would have at least contacted the state committee members to ask for their support in helping him, come up for a day of canvassing or something.
Absolutely.
But I've yet heard anything from his campaign about what they needed or, where could someone help their campaign on.
Yes. Well, Terry Holly just came on the line with us. Terry, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Terry, Tim Shiflett and Bernita Smith are both on the phone. They may chime in at times. But, Terry, you're the 10th Congressional District Chair. You also were the 2006 nominee. So you understand the 10th District as well as anyone. What are your thoughts on just the race and everything going on?
Well, the race is going to be very difficult, to say the least. I was a candidate and didn't qualify this time because I think it's a little bit crowded, and we have about somewhere around 32 to 37% Democratic population in the district. The Republicans claim 65%. The numbers don't look good for us, and it's really going to take a lot of work to put a Democrat into Congress.
Well, and I will say this. Back in Ohio, the special election that happened just before the 2006 election, there was the Ohio second, which had numbers that were not very favorable going in. But it was very much like your 10th congressional district, my 11th congressional district, and Paul Hackett came in there, and a lot of people got excited, and he got in the high 40s and really gave the Republicans a run for their money. Now, of course, the DCCC got involved in that race, and of course, this if we're going to win this, this is going to be a two-stage effort, first election and runoff. Do you think that the time is right for a insurgent campaign in Georgia like that was?
Well, the plus for the Republicans is there's a state Senate race going on. And then the other side of the plus is that the major county that's involved in the state Senate race is Columbia County. And, of course, Whitehead, this is Whitehead's seat that he just gave up. And there are two very well-known names, one better than the other, in Bill Jackson, who's running. And it's going to be difficult because Columbia County will turn out on Election Day. And for Mr. Norwood, I think there were 24,000 votes that he garnered in Columbia County last November the 7th.
Yeah. Well, now, do you think, you know, Augusta, Clark County is the second largest county. Do you think, and obviously a more liberal-leaning Democratic county, do you think that their vote can outpace what it should be?
Well, Columbia County just has the numbers. They turned out more voters last time. I had 6,000 plus, if I recall correctly, in Columbia County. Mr. Norwood had a little over 24,000, so that's 30,000 votes right there. And we didn't have quite that many votes in Clark County, and Clark County is a Democratic county, but the numbers aren't there. A large population of Athens-Clark, of course, is the student population. The students go back home and vote in their respective county. So, you know, you go into Athens-Clark County and you see a lot of folks, but they're going home to vote. And they may live in Americus, Georgia, or Columbus, or up in Dalton. And so looks can be deceiving, as they say.
Yes. Well, what's the most...
That's a good point, Terry.
Yeah. It is about
there won't be a student population there on June 19th.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't quite get that.
I said that was a good point, that there won't be a student population on June 19th.
That's right, and I think that's another reason the governor, bless his heart, wanted it to be in June, is because he knows this, so whatever handful of voters that we could receive in Clark County, they won't be there. And plus, a lot of the professors will be gone and or might be busy teaching, so I think all of that entered into it.
Well, Terry, what's one thing that you saw that really helped your campaign that you would have done again had you run, or you're going to advise the Democratic nominees in your district to do this time?
I would certainly, I certainly believe in grassroots, and we got out, and I think Mr. Norwood ran a media campaign. We got out and ran a grassroots campaign, went around shaking hands, seeing people. The people of the 10th are very responsive to that. You've still got to go up on somebody's front porch and ring that doorbell or walk in their business, and we've gotten away from that, and people don't know us, and they don't see us eye to eye, and we've got to return the voter to look us in the eye and know that we really do care about working-class people and working-class values. And I wouldn't change that. I certainly enjoy being on the campaign trail. That's the sad part of not running, is I really enjoyed it, and it wasn't a chore. It was something that I look forward to because I learned so much. But the voters, I think, still want a congressman. They can pick the phone up and call him, and he's going to respond, and they know him by his first name. And that's what Charlie had, that we've got to make sure our Democrats convey is a warmth, a friendliness. And even though Mr. Norwood, we don't think he was up on the issues, and we think that he dropped the ball on a lot of different things, he did. We have to say that he had an appeal to the voters.
Yes. Well, I mean, I know you'll be there to try to help all the candidates, you know, where you can, because I know it was a district chair. That's one of our responsibilities, to just try to help everybody. And then hopefully we'll get into a runoff situation where we'll just be one person that we can get all behind. Well, thinking more about the race, since you were kind of looking at these Republican candidates, analyzing them, what are your thoughts on the Republican side of the field and how they'll divide the vote?
No doubt, Mr. Whitehead's in the lead. Our Democrats are going to have to do their homework. I'm not hearing a lot on the issues from the Democrats. They've got to learn, Mr. Whitehead and Mr. Green and Dr. Brown in particular. And the thing, David, about Jim Whitehead is, he says that he supports this president, but yet he and the president are worlds apart on the subject of immigration, which is the centerpiece of his campaign. President Bush wants a guest worker program. Mr. Whitehead wants to take all of the immigrants and lock them up immediately or deport them immediately. And so you've got two opposed viewpoints on a major political issue here. And I think our Democrats need to wake up and realize that you got to study your opponent. I'm not hearing
anything about Mr. Norwood and the facts. And the facts are that, you know, he supported the voter ID bill. He is opposed to any kind of immigration process that's going to solve the solution. He just wants to make it one of those emotional issues where people respond and they go vote for him and go home. And I assure you that he will forget about it just as quickly as he brought it up.
Do you think that Jim Whitehead's using the immigration issue so largely, is that a reaction to Bill Green's campaign, who seemed to hit that issue harder, faster than he did?
Well, you know, Mr. Norwood authored the CLEAR bill, and our law enforcement people think is a joke because they don't have the money to lock up the illegal immigrants that are here. I did some calculations back when I was running, and the cost of incarcerating illegal immigrants in this country, based just on an average cost in a county jail, would be $1 billion a day. And, you know, people don't sit down when they make these kind of statements. I think Mr. Whitey has not thought through where we need to be because he ignores the enforcement of our ports. He ignores talking about the cargo holds on jetliners. He's got a lot of holes in his theory, David. And our candidates need to make sure they study this. And and when we have these debates, there are two scheduled, a possible third that I know of. We hold him accountable. We ask him the hard questions.
Yes. Now, when are those debates set for and what locations?
There's one May the 10th in Columbia County, sponsored by the Grovetown Merchants Association. This is a debate, not a forum. And then there's another one, our good friend Sid Gates over in Richmond County. There, Augusta State University will sponsor a debate, and the day for that is April the 16th. May the 16th. And that's going to be at Augusta State University in Richmond County.
Are all 10 candidates going to be invited to these debates?
Yes, they're supposed to all be invited.
Because that would be, you know, make for a format kind of like we have with the presidential debates, where we so many candidates that no one gets a lot of time, which to me would then, in this case, even more so, favor the front runners, like Jim Whitehead.
Right. We were working on debates while I was prior to qualifying, and one of the things I said is we need to get the issues out because we can talk about the issues and debate them, I think, much, much better as Democrats.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Republicans, they talk about us complaining, but, you know, they have a wish list of items they throw out there to the voters, and then they want to walk away from it.
Oh, yes. Well, tell me, how do you think the second and third Republican candidates might do? That's Bill Green and Paul Braun Jr., because in my mind, the key to us making a runoff is them siphoning off enough votes from Jim Whitehead.
Well, the thing is, remember, Paul Brown's from Athens. And then you got Mr. Whitehead from Columbia County. Those are the two biggest strongholds of voters. Dr. Brown is a very nice fellow. I happened to hear him in Stevens County the other night at a forum that I participated in about a week ago. And then Bill Green certainly has experience. I think I heard you say something about that earlier in the show. Both men, though, seem to want to harp on some things that are Republican favorites that voters me talking to voters, Republicans and Democrats, that they do not know a lot about the facts of the issues. And the big thing they want to throw out is this fare tax. People need to read up on it, whether you're Democrat or Republican. Our people that are running for office need to understand it. And that's a big word, David, understand it, because it does have some good points. And if somebody throws out one good point, and you don't know the answer to it, then you're just not going to look real good in front of a lot of voters, because when you say fare tax, of course, people go, well, I'm all for anything fair.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You've got to read the proponent parts of it to understand that it's not quite as fair as it sounds upon the initial reading.
Fair name, and then also I think people think, oh, simple, which, one of our candidates, John Edwards, came up with a plan to make taxes simple but then still keep the progressive structure.
Right, and I can tell you very quickly how to cut taxes, and that is you take the largest deficit that this president has created and you cut the federal budget. We could cut the federal budget 25%, and we would miss a beat. But the Republicans, they're trying to pull the heartstrings, the voters, with the illegal immigration issue and with the fair tax issue that they really don't have solutions to.
Yes. Well, Terry, I've enjoyed having you on the show this week. Any more thoughts on the race that we need to share before you get off?
I think the Democrats need to get out and work hard. Our problem has been we don't go to the polls, and we need to make sure if we figure a 38% voter turnout, it's going to take what we had last time when I ran, about 52,000 votes. That's only 20,000 voters, and 20,000 plus about another 7 could win this election. But it's going to be tough with 3 folks in there. And Denise, of course, has experience, and she's run before. Vita's from Augusta, and she has Richmond County. Mr. Marlowe, of course, is going out there, and I think he's going to run a media campaign, and we'll see what each of them provide. But I just want to encourage them to work hard, utilize our county chairs, the structure we have in place, because we're pulling for them.
Oh, yes. I mean, because obviously if a Democratic candidate gets elected, that moves you up the prestige ladder. With you'll be representing a Democratic district, and we all know that that's a big, powerful thing. And you're just a huge Democrat, so that's what you want.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that. But we can also take some money to the bank, because if we can elect a Democrat to this Congress, then the delegation shift will be from 7 to 6.
Absolutely.
And counties will be able to receive funds unlike they've ever been able to, because the Republicans, of course, they say they don't like pork, but they've been feeding on pork, as we saw this last legislative session, gave themselves a 35% pay increase for their legislative allowance. We're fixing to spend between $750,000 and $1 million on an extra session. The list goes on and on. I don't have to tell our Democratic listeners what we're facing here, but we need to remain staunch, believe in our principles, stand up on our hind legs, and speak loudly and clearly, because I still believe that we're the party of the people.
Yes. Well, Terry, I've enjoyed having you on, and I tell you what, as this race progresses, I'm going to call on you again to give us some more updates in the race when it gets closer to Election Day.
Would love to talk with you again.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bernita and Tim, I guess y'all are there. We got to hear, Terry give his thoughts on the race, knowing as much as he knows. What do y'all think about the race after hearing what Terry thought?
Well, he gave some great insight that I wasn't aware of. I'm not surprised, by the way, now that I've heard what he had to say, that our governor chose to do what he chose to do when he chose to do it. He
Absolutely.
Chose to do it at the optimum time for Republican voters to be there and for Democratic voters in Athens not to be there.
Yes, we say a lot of bad things about Republicans, but I don't think we call them stupid very often.
No, I wouldn't call this governor stupid.
Yes, Bernita, any thoughts on our interview?
No, I thought it was really good, and I agree that the Democrat really has to work hard, whomever it is they really need. And I don't think you could... I agree with Terry. You can't do this 100% a media campaign. You just, I don't know one race that has been done 100% media. We know we've tried it. That would be former Governor Barnes and former Lieutenant Governor. And as you said, I pointed out former in front. They both tried a full media campaign, and that didn't work out too well.
Oh, yes. And I think, and obviously, in a runoff or special election, if you can just get people to the polls. I mean, there's a grid of people that Democrats that show up every time and Republicans that show up every time, and there's Democrats that show up a little bit of the time and Republicans show up a little bit of the time. If we go in that quadrant and pull people to the polls, that's going to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about timing, while the timing may be good based on the time of year, which UGA and other colleges may be out, I know that the timing is not good for the Republicans if they make a mockery of this special election, this special session, and shine more light on themselves negatively. A lot of times people say, oh, the Republicans are messing up, and they might not differentiate between Congress or Senate. But in this case, with, Jim Whitehead being a state senator, he is culpable.
Well, see, that's where I think we go back to what the Democratic Party should be doing right now, because it would help our congressional candidates.
Yes.
If they got the message out there that, our state senators didn't pass. So, we could do the work for our Democratic candidates right now.
Oh, absolutely. We got to spread the message and get in. And even if people might want to work for one of the three now and then their candidate not make the runoff, then work after the runoff in a big way, and I think that's when you're really going to see the Democratic Party galvanize if we can make this runoff. But I know that, you know, Jane Kidd and Mike Cantone have both said that there are going to be some efforts that the party can do in a non-candidate way to get out the Democratic vote and, you know, test some things for the future, and I think that's real positive. Well, Bernita, I'm glad you could come on the show this week, and I want you to come on, you know, as a regular person and just be reading the blogs for us so you can give us great reports.
Okay, thank you very much for this opportunity, and I'm going to sign off right now.
That'll be great. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, Tim, I think the show's coming to a close, but I think it's been another success.
Yes, sir.
Well, do you have a parting thought for the week?
Well, I certainly have an outrage of the week. Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle, in a prepared statement, said of the upcoming special session, "Continuing the debate on overriding the governor's veto of the mid-year budget will only perpetuate confrontation and conflict, which doesn't help the citizens we were elected to serve." Well, that's a nice sentiment. Of course, not lost on the lieutenant governor in all of this is that there's a gubernatorial election in 3 years and that House Speaker Glenn Richardson is his chief rival for the GOP nomination, and now he can sit on the sidelines and let Richardson and Sonny Perdue slug it out. I just wonder how Cagle will explain all of this to conservative Republican voters who were wanting the House budget and its tax cuts. I'm just certain, though, he'll come up with another prepared statement for that, and that's my outrage of the week, David.
Absolutely. I think Casey Cagle, he didn't show any leadership. He just showed political maneuvering.
Absolutely.
I just have a parting thought. The Falcons have been a lot of the news late this offseason for some real negative things. And, you know, character issues hadn't hit the Falcons as hard as the Bengals or the Titans or some other teams. But we're getting our fair share, and it's been kind of make me embarrassed to be a huge fan, former employee, and season ticket holder. But I do want to give them a thumbs up on their first-round draft pick, the new Jamal Anderson from Arkansas. This guy sounds like a great kid. His father is deaf and was the first African-American deaf man to earn a doctorate. Just a really level-headed kid. Apparently, anytime anybody made fun of his father for being deaf, he stuck up for him. Knows sign language backward and forward, so I'm sure at different times he may get involved with the deaf population in a way that, you know, most pro athletes aren't able to. So it's good to see us bringing some, you know, good character guys in the fold. So,
he's a great defensive end, and we can certainly use one of those with Kearney being gone.
And that's the bottom line. Obviously, if we could find, you know, 12 choir boys to draft, but they do have to play a little football. But it's really good when you get a combination. And I guess expounding on my point, incidentally, we drafted a guard out of Texas, Justin Blaylock, that had a 41 on the Wonderlic, which is basically the NFL IQ test. And that was just good to see that we're, you know, also rewarding intelligence. But I'm sure it's because he can also move a pile at times as well. Well,
I'm
Tim,
ready for some account.
Yes. Well, it's been another great show, and I think we'll have another big one up next week. People have been hearing about the show, talking about it, and I've been talking to more people. They're like, yeah, I'll come on. When do you need me? So I think we'll have some more great guests and some great analysis from people like Bernita and yourself and Scott Aikman.
Sounds good.
Thank you, sir. And thanks, everybody, for listening to the Kudzu Vine. Look for us on the Internet at blogtalkradio.com/kudzu every week at 7 on Sundays, and you can download us anytime as a podcast at our site. Thanks, and bye.